Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of my good evening. Welcome to the programme here on Manx Radio, where before 5.30 we'll take you through some of the main news of the day. Tonight, Manx Care's medical director offers reassurance following growing concerns over hospital bed capacity. There's also been quite a heated debate in Tynwald today about the post office. We'll bring you the details on that. The steam packet company's been opening its books, revealing operating performance and profit figures from recent years. And later in Bulldrine, the community is coming together for a meeting next week to discuss the future of a local hall. All that, we'll also have a look at the weather. Hasn't it been absolutely amazing to see that sunshine today? The traffic and the travel. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can text 166 177. We'll start with a roundup of the main news headlines with Siobhan, first of all, Fastamai.
Manx Care's medical director insists Nobles Hospital is safe after concerns were raised about its capacity. It's after the medical staff committee highlighted a critical shortfall in the number of available beds earlier this week, claiming it posed a direct risk to people's lives. Tynwald has instructed the Department of Infrastructure to bring forward a funding request, implementation plan and business case to reinstate the Douglas Bay Horse Tramway along Douglas Prom. Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby put forward the proposals after historian Charles Gard released a video accusing politicians of not caring about the last surviving horse tramway in the world.
When a subject sparks conversation, not only in this chamber but in homes, cars and around the dinner table, it shows that this matter cares deeply to them and the community that we represent.
A verdict of accidental death has been recorded at the inquest of a Peel man who died in a road traffic collision. Kian Broadhead was killed as a result of catastrophic head injuries in the early hours of Sunday the 14th of September last year. The Speaker of the House of Keys has called for greater oversight of changes to Isle of Man post office services, warning some residents risk being left behind by increasing digitisation. And the Old Castletown Road will partially reopen ahead of schedule from 7am tomorrow. It's been closed to traffic for the past week and a half, whilst Manx Utilities carries out work on the wastewater main there. Further afield, a second university in Kent has confirmed it's affected by a meningitis outbreak in the county, where 20 cases are under investigation. Iran's intelligence minister is the latest in a string of top Iranian leaders to be killed in an Israeli airstrike. Former MP Kristen Blunt has been charged with four drug offences, and temperatures have hit the 20s in parts of London and Wales today, making it the hottest day of the year so far. There are your headlines. I'll have your news in full at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Siobhan. Well, the weather here, brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing, it's going to stay fine this evening and tonight, and tomorrow generally sunny as well, still with largely light winds. Temperatures overnight will be around 6. It'll be 13 or 14 again tomorrow, so not quite the 20s that London's seen, but still good enough. Dry with sunny spells again on Friday, but also the risk on Friday of coastal mist or fog patches. They will be around the south and east of the island mainly. Light winds and again highest temperatures of around 12, and just looking ahead to the weekend, fine and bright on Saturday as well.
Aluminium windows and lift and slide patio doors now available for you to try in the Manx Glass and Glazing showroom on the Stugbrough Trading Estate.
It's just gone 3.5 minutes past five here on Update. And a story that we've been covering over the past few days is the bed capacity at Nobles Hospital. And Manx Care's medical director does insist Nobles Hospital is safe after those concerns were raised. Earlier this week, the medical staff committee highlighted what they called a critical shortfall in the number of available beds, claiming it posed a direct risk to people's lives. So the MSC is made up of 75 senior doctors and consultants and has called for 50 more beds to be made available. Chris Stockport, who is the medical director of the hospital, has been talking to Amy Griffiths.
The 233 beds includes a small number of beds that were previously in Ramsay Hospital.
But they are actually here on site at Nobles.
They are.
It's not the same situation as it is in the UK, where we're seeing lots of people being treated in corridors, for example. How close are we to that stage, and could we ever reach that stage in the near future?
We do not and have not had corridor care in this hospital, and we're not close to having corridor care. It is not a situation that we would envisage or tolerate.
One of the things they're calling for is 50 more beds. Is that something that is either feasible or necessary in your opinion?
Simply committing to bringing 50 new beds in is difficult to do, because this is not about 50 physical beds. It's about the space, it's about the staff and employees. employing additional staff to do that will always be challenging. If we put resource into providing an extra 50 beds, that means taking resource away from other services.
When the hospital opened in 2003, there were 314 beds. So why has that decreased so much in that time?
I can't think of a health jurisdiction where the number of beds haven't reduced over that period of time. And that's because healthcare has changed over those times. And probably the area that has had the biggest impact is how we treat our elderly patients, because that has revolutionised over the course of the last 10 or 20 years. We know that if we admit people into hospital where the care could be delivered safely and appropriately at home, they tend to do worse coming into hospital.
So it's not a case that care at home first approach has been adopted as a result of capacity issues. It's actually the other way around.
It is absolutely the other way around.
In terms of capacity then, is Nobles Hospital currently operating at a safe level?
Yes. We have some days where it is particularly busy, and on those days, sometimes our flow through the hospital is less effective than we want. And I don't want to step away from that. There are days when it can be difficult and we're doing everything we can to improve that. But on most days, that's not the case. And on most days, flow is good in the hospital and people get excellent care. I'm content that care in this hospital is safe.
That is Manx Care's Medical Director, Chris Stockport, talking to Amy there. As you might imagine, much more to that interview, and we will be answering some of the questions that you've had on Breakfast tomorrow. Coming up to 7 minutes past five, and just a warning now that this next story does contain information which some people may find distressing. A verdict of accidental death has been recorded at the inquest of a Peel man who died in a road traffic collision. Kian Broadhead was killed as a result of catastrophic head injuries in the early hours of Sunday, the 14th of September last year. Siobhan Fletcher has the details.
The 25-year-old's work van left the A4 Coast Road between Peel and Kirkmichael at the Devil's Elbow and was later found in the ravine below. Evidence read aloud to the court this morning revealed he was three times the legal limit for alcohol following a night out in Peel. On the Saturday afternoon, Mr. Broadhead had competed in a football match as a member of Peel's combination team against league leaders Corinthians. Acting as team captain, he'd scored a goal in the notable 5-3 victory at Ballafletcher, his 10th goal in 118 senior appearances made since his senior debut in 2019. Following the win, the football team went out to celebrate, visiting several pubs in the town. Mr. Broadhead was described as chatty and in good spirits. He was later joined by his girlfriend and her friend, and also saw his mum at one point in the evening. In the early hours of the morning, following a disagreement with a friend, he left the town, with the court told he sent a voice message via Snapchat to his girlfriend, letting her know he was going home. As the day went on and no one had heard from him, he was reported as missing to police. It was also noted his van wasn't where it was previously seen parked. The vehicle was later discovered in the ravine below the Devil's Elbow by his girlfriend's brother after he noted damage to the road at the corner when driving into Peel. When his mum later received his iPhone and turned it on, it was revealed the phone's crash detection feature was triggered at 7 minutes past midnight on the Sunday morning. The safety feature automatically detects severe car crashes, and if a crash is detected, the device sounds an alarm, displays an alert, and calls emergency services if you do not respond within 30 seconds. However, due to a lack of signal in the area, his emergency contacts were not alerted. Recording a verdict of accidental death at Douglas Courthouse, Coroner of Inquest James Brooks said he was satisfied the alcohol Kian had consumed meant he missed or misjudged the bend, either by not steering into the corner at all or not steering enough. But he added that he hopes consideration can be given to the mobile service in the area being improved, so emergency alerts are successfully sent out in any future similar incidents. Expressing his condolences to Mr. Broadhead's family, Mr. Brooks said it was clear in witness statements from the night that he was a happy man and that he hoped that is the way you are able to remember him.
Siobhan Fletcher reporting there. It is 10 past five here on Update. Well, the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company says it's carried its highest number of passengers in more than 15 years. So new directors' reports show revenue has increased as well, but profits have dipped slightly. Lewis has been taking a look through the documents. Lewis Fastermy, what do they tell us then?
Fastermy, well, the headline figure is passenger numbers. The company says it carried 630,000 people in 2024, which it describes as its busiest year since 2007. Revenue also rose to around $87 million, helped by strong TT travel and an increase in freight volumes.
But despite that growth, Lewis, as we just heard, profits have actually fallen.
Yeah, slightly. The reports show profits attributable to the company's owners fell from around $11.7 million to $10.5 million. Directors say that's largely down to higher operating costs, as well as the financial impact of having the Manxman in service for a full year, including depreciation costs as well.
And on that, there are also some developments around the fleet.
Yeah, so the company says Manxman has played a major role in boosting passenger and freight capacity. But the reports also note that the fast craft Mananan is currently due to be replaced by the end of this year, 2026, under the Sea Services Agreement. The board says it's now seeking an extension to that deadline so any replacement can balance customer expectations with environmental considerations.
Lewis, thank you very much indeed. You can read that full report on the Manx Radio website. Now, the Speaker of the House of Keys has called for greater oversight of changes to Isle of Man Post Office services, warning some residents risk being left behind by increasing digitisation. It was a really heated debate today and saw a significant number of voices added to the conversation. Let's hear from a few of those now from the Chamber earlier.
The recent Public Accounts Committee all evidence session showed that we are full steam ahead on digitisation, whilst those who cannot keep up are being left behind, perhaps even abandoned when you look at the cumulative effects alongside the withdrawal of post office counter services. I'm concerned that the result will be a two-tier society. Cost-cutting alone cannot be the guiding principle. Community well-being must be part of the equation. Mr. President, we must decide whether we want an Isle of Man where public services remain accessible to all, or one where convenience for government comes at the cost of community. Are we happy with digital first, community last?
This motion, while well-intentioned, is founded on misunderstandings of what Tynwald approved in 2019 and of the Post Office's statutory and regulatory obligations. The situation we're in today is not sudden, nor is it unexpected. It's the natural progression of the direction of travel previously advised to this Court. For these reasons, Mr. President, the motion mischaracterises the Post Office's responsibilities, conflates postal services with agency services, and seeks to direct the Post Office to act in areas that lie outside its statutory remit and operational control. It's neither fair nor accurate to describe the Post Office's actions as deplorable or arbitrary, when they are the predictable result of government policy changes, customer behaviour and regulatory obligations.
Honourable members in here voting against budgets because the government's not addressing its deficit, and yet people are calling for more money, more subvention to be put into the post office. They're calling for something to happen where actually people are going to knowingly make losses, effectively, to subsidise things that are no longer really viable. And then how important is that when set against delivery of medical services, say, for example, in the community?
How many people in here have been consulted? I take it that's none then. Now, I am disgusted with what I've heard here today. Where's the empathy? We cannot ignore the social consequences.
Okay, that was Arbury Carstan Malou, MHK Tim Glover, before that Chief Minister Alfred Cannon, Chair of the Post Office Stu Peters, and the mover Juan Watterson, the Speaker of the House of Keys. It is coming up to 5:15.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
Well, nothing specific on the roads to look out for. The mountain road was shut for a time earlier this afternoon because there was some glass that had been spilt, but that's all been cleared now, so all good there. It is the usual traffic lights and things to look out for, but some good news this afternoon was that Manx Utilities say that from tomorrow morning at 7 a.m, the old Castletown Road will be partially reopened. So it'll be reopened one way. That will allow traffic into Douglas. The road does remain on schedule to fully reopen from next Wednesday. That's the 25th of March. All okay down at the airport, and the latest with the steam packet, the Manxman due in around 6:45, and it will head out again at 7:15.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside. Quayside, 664417. Head to Quayside Tyres and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate. Quayside.
Well, now Tim Wood has concluded for this month. Some other news from the court is the fact that members gave their unanimous support to the first report from the Youth Select Committee, which investigated the issues around young people and housing on the island. So the committee was established by the court in 2022 and given autonomy to choose a subject of its own. And during a three-year period, the committee's consulted widely ahead of the production of its report, which was presented to Tim Wood again by the Speaker, June Watterson. Simon Richardson has more.
The Youth Committee's first report, which contains a series of recommendations, drew widespread praise from Tynwald members. The document focused on four main areas: availability of affordable housing, regulation of the rental sector, provision of more suitable social housing for care leavers and vulnerable young adults, and the creation of more suitable housing for single and childless young residents. Legislative Council member Kirsty Morfitt was first to commend the committee for producing an insightful and compelling report into a crucial subject.
I have seen firsthand the devastating effects that homelessness can have on young and vulnerable people, the instability, the risk, and the long-term impact on their well-being and future opportunities. These experiences reinforce why it is so important that we respond with urgency, compassion, and practical solutions.
Douglas North MHK David Ashford spoke of the importance of giving young people a voice. He said the committee's efforts deserve every recognition going.
For a group of young people to gather evidence, question witnesses, and present clear recommendations to this honourable court is a daunting and significant commitment, and it deserves every recognition going. What gives this report particular weight is that it reflects the experiences of young people who are directly affected by the issues under discussion. I personally think the quality and depth of the report that they have managed to produce shows that the future of our island is in good hands.
When it came to the vote, all 23 members of the House of Keys and 8 members of the Legislative Council present voted to receive the report and its recommendations. Alex Cowley is chair of the committee and was happy its work was so well received by Tynwald.
Yeah, I was very glad to see that, and it's almost inspirational in a way to see that young people's voices are being heard and that our collaborative work will actually make a difference and that we will be able to influence policies that are important to all young people on the Isle of Man.
That is Chair of the Youth Committee, Alex Cowley, there speaking after that report was given unanimous support in Tynwald this month. So great to see those young people so engaged with politics. 17 and a half minutes past five. Well, the Isle of Man celebrated World Social Work Day this week with over 90 people attending an event at Kildare at Nobles Hospital. Julie Gibney and Nick Fripp are the Assistant Directors of Children and Family Social Work and Adult Social Care, respectively. They explain now the importance of recognising social workers' roles in the community.
It's a wonderful career where you can see positive outcomes and you can see the difference that you've made as a social worker to individuals and families. So it's a very rewarding career. It's a difficult one because social workers, no matter what discipline you're from, carry secondary trauma, even with the support mechanisms put in place, because of what you see, what you hear, what you do on a daily basis. You're not always working with families when families are at their best. A lot of the time it's in crisis where people need support. So if anybody's thinking about becoming a social worker, please think hard, and if this is the career for you, get in touch with either Nick or myself and we'll have a chat with you about what the next steps could be for you moving in that direction.
And one thing I'd say as well, days like today remind you how proud you are of the colleagues you work with every day. We get used to what people do every day, but actually when you step back from it, you actually see what incredible achievements and efforts people make.
The people who work on the Isle of Man, do they bring up anything today which that they want to see change going forward as well?
Did have a long conversation. There was quite a number of interactive sessions which were really fun, but they also pulled out themes from people: how we can move on, how we can develop, how we can improve outcomes for children and families and adults that might need support. So there was a lot of interaction, a lot of good ideas moving forward and how we can develop and make things better for the people who live on the island.
A lot of the things that people who work on the island were saying can be both good and bad. So resources were seen as a barrier to change, but also where resources had been provided, they had helped change.
Yeah.
Working together helps move things forward and improve services. Where we all work in separate silos, that stops change happening.
That is Nick Fripp and Julie Gibney talking about World Social Work Day, which has been celebrated this week. Now, a requisition meeting called In Baldrian is going to be held in a hall whose future is the subject of the gathering. So it's going to be in the Baldrian Methodist Sunday School, and it is on Friday, March the 27th. So that is a week on Friday. And really, it's because a dwindling congregation has led to a threat to its future. Captain of the parish, Captain Steve Carter, MBE, says it really is a valuable asset, and its loss would lead to the small community there not having a public space for gathering.
The Sunday School in Baldrian, Methodist Sunday School in Baldrian, was the original chapel, which was built in, I think, 1845. And then subsequently, the congregation over the years expanded, and so it wasn't big enough, and so they built the second Methodist chapel across the road.
Which is the one at the top of the hill before you go down.
Which is the one by the clock.
The building we're talking about is just down
it's
the hill.
It's just down the hill
on
the opposite side of the road.
Next
so if
to
you're
the
going
line.
Towards Laxey, you go past Baldrian Park and past the Baldrian clock, the Millennium clock, and you start dropping down the hill, and then there's a turning left into Baldrian Road, and it's literally just a few yards down past the original chapel, and it's on the left-hand side. It is the only community building in Baldrian. Now, the situation is, unfortunately, that the trustees are all getting on a little bit, shall we say, no disrespect to them, and the congregation, the average congregation, is fairly small, and I think that the both the trustees and the Methodist circuit, which controls all the Methodist churches and chapels in the Isle of Man, have decided that it doesn't have sufficient income to justify continue using it, basically. I understand that there is a motion at the Methodist circuit meeting this month to make a decision on whether it's actually going to close as a chapel. But of course, if that was the case, then Baldrian would lose its only public facility.
So that requisition meeting is at 7:30 on Friday, March the 27th. We'll bring you up to date, and we will have a reporter at that meeting to see what the future of the hall will be. 22 minutes past five, a Manx wool handler has come back from the Sheep Shearing Championships in New Zealand with a career best result of fourth place. Now, Rose Quellen Christian was part of a group of four at the World Golden Shears event alongside Daniel Creer, Philip Christian and Hannah Moore. 28 countries took part in total. Hannah and Rose, who competed in the novice wool handling final, have been talking to Simon Clark.
I just happened to be on form the day of the Golden Shears competition. I was amazed, really, to get through to the semis, and then even more amazed to get through to the final, so it was good. I did slightly mess up the final because it was nerve-wracking being up on stage. I think I forgot quite a few bits, but it was just a massive thing and like a really good experience to actually go out there and do it and do well.
Well, Hannah, let's turn to you because you went out there in December to New Zealand.
Yeah, I left the island in early December with a 24-hour delay due to Manx weather and arrived there and worked for 3 months with the PMS gang. So yeah, spent 3 months in the sheds before the rest of the team joined me for the last couple of weeks, which was lovely to see some familiar faces. But yeah, just an amazing experience and learnt a lot. There's not just one way of shearing over there, and every day is different. You walk into a shed and it's different. You've got different styles of boards. So you've got closed board, open board and raised board, and then you could be shearing lambs, second shear or full wool. I remember my first few days and not having a clue what I was doing and thinking, I can't last 3 months here. And it's either you have an option, don't you? You give in and go home, or you find stubbornness and determination and come through the other side. And by the end of the season, I could walk into a shed and be head rousy and just set a shed up for any kind of shearing we were doing, which looking back, I'm very proud of myself for. I remember the girls asking me on the first day, are you able to pick an eye clip out? And I just was like, no. And then they just gave me one job for that first hour, and then just slowly introduced me to it, and then that's maybe when my confidence grew, when I started doing a few more local shows, which helps massively. It's nerve-wracking to get up there, especially when they announce from the Isle of Man. Most of the people you talk to don't even have a clue where we are, let alone that we have sheep and we can shear. And yeah,
Oh, isn't that brilliant? Rose and Hannah talking to Simon there. You can listen to the full interview in the Countryside podcast, which you can find on the Manx Radio website. It's coming up to 25 past five, time for sport, brought to you by the Print Shed here on Update. And Fastamai, Rob.
Fastamai. Well, first off, former Isle of Man tennis star Billy Harris has been knocked out in the first round of this year's Miami Open qualifiers. Competing in the men's singles qualifying phase, Harris suffered a straight sets defeat to Australian competitor and men's qualifying fourth seed Alexander Vukic yesterday. Well, whilst the match time itself was just over 2 hours, there was a lengthy delay toward the end of the first set after rain suspended play for a long time. Well, separately, this is the first time Harris has actually lost against Vukic, having beaten him in the previous two meetings prior to that. In football, a Joe Quayle hat-trick saw St John's United fight back from a goal down to defeat Rushen United in the Canada Life Men's Premier League last night. The hosts claimed all 3 points during the first midweek match of the Manx season after Rushen United had led in the first half through a Charlie Kelly strike. St John's remained seventh in the table after their victory, but moved to within 3 points of Onken just above them, whilst Rushen remained fifth, 2 points off Laxey just above them. Elsewhere, two Isle of Man cricket players have been selected to represent Europe in a series of matches against the world-famous Marylebone Cricket Club. Lucy Barnett and Carl Hartman will be part of the ICC Europe women's and men's under-23 teams respectively for multiple fixtures to take place from next month. Meanwhile, Isle of Man cricket coach Sally Green has been chosen to be part of the women's team's all-female staff. The women's squad will play against an MCC side at the iconic Lords Cricket Ground on Friday the 17th of April and then face them again at Walmsley Estate on Saturday the 18th of April. Elsewhere, the men's team will face the MCC in a four-match T20 series across Thursday the 30th of April and Friday the 1st of May, also at the Walmsley Estate. And finally, in motorsport, a Cookstown rider considered to be one of Northern Ireland's emerging road racing talents is due to make his long-awaited Isle of Man TT races debut this year. Gary McCoy is expected to compete across the 1,000cc classes and supersport races on the Snaefell Mountain course this summer. He'd previously been due to make his maiden TT appearance last year, but was ruled out after sustaining injuries at the Northwest 200 in 2025. For 2026, he'll pilot BMW machinery in the senior superbike and superstock races, whilst riding a Suzuki 750 for both supersport events.
Rob, thank you very much indeed. If only we can have that sunshine that's out there at the moment for TT, we'll be all right, won't we?
Fingers crossed everywhere, I think.
I know, it's fast approaching, but that is all from Update this evening. Thank you very much indeed for your company as ever. Find out all about all tonight's top stories on the Manx Radio website. Coming up next, it's Spotlight with Howard Kane, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council. Chris Kinley will be here at 6 with Greatest Hits. At 9, it's Country Roads with Andy Wind. And at 10, Dave Moore will be here with After Hours. Update will be back at 5 tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.